You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking National League East with MLB.com's NL East beat reporters. Talking Braves with Mark Bowman, we'll be taking a look at Julio Teheran and other trade possibilities. Talking Marlins with Joe Fusaro, we'll be looking at the Fernando Rodney acquisition and what they could do about their rotation. Talking New York Mets with Anthony DeComo, we'll be taking a look at Jose Reyes and also Travis d'Arnaud. Talk Philadelphia Phillies with Todd Zielecki, we'll be looking at some of the offensive breakouts this year and some trade possibilities. And talking Washington Nationals with Bill Ladson, taking a look at Joe Ross, Lucas Giolito in the rotation, and the Michael Taylor situation. This is MLB.com Extras. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Bill, the Nationals got some distressing news recently with Joe Ross going on the DL with a shoulder issue. First, just sort of broadly, what's the level of concern for a guy who's a pretty key piece of their rotation?
Well, Conan Dusty Baker, he's on an innings limit right now. And once he gets back, he won't be going deep in games like he did before he got hurt. If you remember, he was going six or even seven innings, sometimes more than that. But I spoke to a scout, it's funny, yesterday before the game, and he thought that Ross was throwing too many sliders, and that's the reason for the shoulder injury. So if that's the case, I won't talk to Ross until tomorrow. But, if that's the case, then he's going to have to find another pitch because that's his main pitch of the slider, and his brother's the same way.
Just as far as the injury itself, what is the level of worry as far as is this something that could be a while, or is this something where they give him some rest and he's back in 2 weeks? I mean, just as far as the injury itself, how concerned is the club?
I don't think they're that concerned now. They've been talking after the All-Star break, but I think it's going to be more than that. I mean, knowing the Nationals the way they are with arms, it's going to be more than the 2 weeks, I believe. And I just don't think they're going to put him in there as long as Giolito is still pitching well and he's healthy.
And that leads to the next question to me. So when they called Lucas Giolito up, it appeared, or it at least appears in retrospect, that they were not expecting to need him for more than a start or two. They had an opening.
Correct.
They called him up to make a start. It's still, for right now, he's there, and it makes sense to give him the next start when that time comes up and essentially have him slot in for Ross. But If we're talking about a period of a few weeks here, is this Giolito's role for the next few weeks, or is this get him one, get to the All-Star break, regroup, and reevaluate what to do with that rotation spot?
I think he's in the rotation until Ross gets better. I mean, I think he's in there after the All-Star break. I just think, obviously, he has to show that, he can really carry this team for a while, and I think he can do that. I mean, I was impressed with what I saw, the way he pitched. I mean, that fastball is really blazing, to be honest with you, and I'm impressed by what I saw from Giolito. He's not afraid at all.
What does he need to do, or maybe the better question is, what can they do for him to help make sure he throws enough strikes and locates well enough, consistently enough, to pitch in the big leagues? Because I think if there has been an issue in the minors, it has been location. He's walked some guys, and obviously big leaguers will pounce on that. So what are they trying to do? What do they hope to do to make sure that he locates the way you need to locate with stuff like his in the big leagues?
Well, I think that's going to be on Mike Maddux. I mean, Mike Maddux, everyone is raving about him. I think if he continues to throw strikes, I think if he just get the job done, period. And I think he'll be there a while. I don't think he'll be there long term. I think once Ross gets back, he'll be, who knows? I mean, you know how the Nationals are. I mean, he could be back in the minors or he could be in the bullpen. Who knows? But it's a wait and see type thing right now.
And because you are a pro and a veteran, you just teed up my next question. Gio Gonzalez has really struggled lately. Now, he's obviously got a few weeks here. Everybody's got a few weeks here. If this is the five, this is the five. But let's say 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, whenever this happens to be, Giolito has been good, or at least good enough, Gonzalez is still struggling. Is there an opportunity for Giolito to pitch his way over the next few weeks into maybe holding on to a rotation spot, presumably at Gonzalez's expense, but maybe by some other way?
You know, it's funny you mention that. I mean, I've heard a lot of people in the organization say, you know, we could see Gio turn into Giolito. So I don't, you know, there's a possibility of that. But there's no question that Gio Gonzalez has to be much better. He has to throw strikes. He has to keep the ball down. I mean, if you saw what happened yesterday against the Brewers, I mean, the ball was up. And he's got to be almost perfect now to stay in his rotation because, you know, the last, I would say, 8 starts, he has not been good at all. He has not.
Yeah, and it's really weird because I was looking this up, and obviously, you know, I certainly see him pitch a good amount of the time. And, you know, even now, there's no question about the stuff. But, you know, his last 8 starts, he's got an 8.10 ERA, which is amazing.
Right.
But he's also got 57 strikeouts in 43 innings. I mean, that's Jose Fernandez kind of stuff. So
yes, he has.
How do those things add up? How do you – and he's walking too many guys, but he's not, like, walking the whole team. He's not walking 2 guys every 3 innings. How does that kind of add up that you can strike out that many guys, miss that many bats, and give up that many runs without having a ridiculous number of walks?
I think it comes down to confidence, Matthew. I really believe this. You know, you look at what happened yesterday. If someone on the team makes an error, for some reason, Gio can't really get it together. I don't know why. But he seems, you know, he should have the confidence knowing that he can get out of this inning, that he's going to get these guys out. And I think it comes down to confidence. If he can get that together, he'll be okay.
And we speak just a few minutes before the Mets discuss the formal arrival of Jose Reyes. There's obviously a lot packed into that. We are, for these purposes, going to stick to the baseball part of it, because in part because I think there's a lot to talk about from the baseball part of it. And I'm curious what you have to say about this first part, which is that it seemed initially when this came together, the idea was he'd be a utility guy, he'd be a useful spare part. As this has gotten closer, it sounds more like he's going to be the primary, if not the only, third baseman. Is that an accurate read?
I'm not sure I'd call him the primary third baseman, Matthew. I think, in a, you know, if everything goes right, certainly he's going to be out there more often than not. So the Mets still like Wilmer Flores, and certainly Wilmer's had a pretty good week, pretty good couple of weeks, and, you know, is prone to a little streakiness like so many hitters in this Mets lineup. But I don't think he's just going to go away. And that's kind of the whole point of getting Jose Reyes for the Mets. That's kind of the whole point of entering the season with Wilmer Flores, that super sub, the way the Mets did. They built this offense really wanting to be able to rest their guys, even their primary guys, their Neil Walkers, their Eztrubel Cabreras, Lucas Duda when he was healthy, certainly David Wright when he was healthy. They wanted this to be a very flexible, very malleable on a daily basis thing where, yes, you've got your starters, but you're going to have a guy like Wilmer Flores playing 4 to 5 times a week, starting 4 to 5 times a week at different positions. Now I think Jose Reyes is kind of that guy, and while third base is where he's going to start out, now that he's at the big league level, the Mets are going to look at him as an outfielder a little bit, so they'll certainly try him there. They will give him reps at shortstop. Eztrubel Cabrera's had a little bit of a nagging knee issue recently. They will give him a little bit of a look at second base. So between all of those positions, I think more often than not, you're going to see Jose Reyes out there. But I don't think it would be right just to call him the starting third baseman, because I think we're still going to see Wilmer Flores a lot out there. And I still wouldn't put it past the Mets to make another acquisition at that position, whether it's Yulies Gurriel or someone who becomes available closer to the trade deadline.
What exactly are they expecting from him as a ball player? And the main reason I ask that is that it's been 3 years since Jose Reyes was a particularly good major leaguer. His bat has been in some decline. Now, they're not going to be asking, as you say, not going to be asking to play that much shortstop. He really wasn't a very good shortstop the last couple of years, and there was talk even in Toronto of moving him off short. What do they think they're getting just as far as a ball player?
Matthew, I don't think they know. Honestly, I don't think they know what they're getting. I think this is a little bit of a lottery ticket. Really, anything they get from Jose Reyes, I think for the most part they see as a bonus. Remember, they're paying him basically the league minimum, and they also wrote into the contract that they get him for basically the league minimum next year as well. So if he turns out to be nothing, if he turns out to be cooked, totally done, they lose essentially nothing by trying this. I don't think their scouts were out there watching Jose Reyes when he was playing in his rehab games with the Rockies saying, wow, this guy's going to be a difference maker. I think they hope that guy's still in there. I think certainly, if nothing else, he brings an element that the Mets lack, and that's a guy that you can put at the top of the batting order, a guy who, in his prime, was a really good hitter, probably an underrated hitter, a better hitter than people gave him credit for. Remember, he won a batting title, could hit from both sides of the plate, and also gives that element of speed that the Mets really don't have anywhere on their roster. Curtis Granderson, who's been leading off, doesn't run anymore at the stage of his career at age 35, and the rest of the thumpers that they have populating this lineup really don't run at all either. The Mets don't bunt, they don't hit and run, they don't do any of those things, and not that Jose Reyes just by himself is going to change the identity of the offense. As we've talked about on this podcast before, I don't think he should. I don't think the Mets should change, because hitting a lot of home runs is a fine way to win ball games. But to have that as an option, to have a guy that you can put at the top of your order and move Granderson down into more of an RBI spot and just do these things that you don't have elsewhere, that you can't get elsewhere, I think they're just hoping it works out in that way. And if it doesn't, so what? You lost essentially nothing.
Todd, I think we sort of expected that the Phillies might be able to put together a pretty good rotation coming into this year. Thought they might even assemble an interesting back of the bullpen. I don't think a lot of people expected to see the kind of development from some of these young hitters that we've seen. Three guys who are sort of at a point in their career where they might be taking a step forward and might be just having a career here and might even just be hot for a couple of months. I'm curious what you think, because in all three cases, they're guys where, if this is real, it could be a big deal, not just this year going forward. So between Cody Ashe, who has never slugged 400, Cameron Rupp, who hit 245 and 215 in the two highest levels in the minors, and Peter Borges, who basically has one good full season in the majors in 6 years, who should we be buying and who should we not?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because I think out of the three, I think Cody Ashe has probably been the biggest surprise to people with the Phillies, in the sense that what you just said, he had never slugged 400 before. He really kind of took a step backward last season, and I think the Phillies, if they're being honest, kind of saw him as a guy on the way out that really, really needed to put together a very, very strong season to have any shot at being part of this team again. So I'm not quite convinced that, you know, he's the guy that has been hitting the ball as well as he has been the last couple weeks. You know, Cameron Rupp, I think going into the season, there were some people in the organization that thought, you know what, everybody's really high on Jorge Alfaro and Andrew Knapp, understandably so, to their top catching prospects. But they thought that Cameron Rupp had a future in this organization as a backup catcher or as a guy that maybe shared some responsibilities behind the plate. Because let's be honest, you know, what are the odds that both Andrew Knapp and Jorge Alfaro both turn out to be frontline catchers? I mean, you probably wouldn't want to put a lot of money on that happening, just the nature of the way the game goes. And then Peter Borges, the feeling I got from the Phillies is they certainly weren't expecting what he's been doing the last couple weeks. But they thought his thing, the reason why he has struggled really, and he hasn't put together a good season since that season with the Anaheim, LA Angels a few years ago, is A, because he's been hurt a lot, and B, he has not played a lot when he has been healthy. And they believe that he was a guy that if he got regular playing time, he would be able to produce like he did in that good season with the Angels, which I think was 2011 maybe, or 2012, a few years ago. So if I'm buying on a guy right now, honestly, I'm probably buying Cameron Rupp in this, if we're talking about this future with the Phillies. If I had to put money on one of those three guys being with the Phillies a year or two down the road, I would think Cameron Rupp might be the guy. I think Peter Borges, if he keeps hitting like this, if I'm the Phillies, I'm definitely listening to trade offers for him. And honestly, I'm listening for trade offers for Cody Ashe too, because when you look at this team down the road,
you see Odubel Herrera in the outfield. You see Nick Williams coming up. And then in Double A, you see Dylan Cousins, who's a power hitter. And you know, they have some other outfielders in the system that they like. So I would probably rank it in that order, Rupp, then Borges, then Ashy.
And to me, Rupp may be the most interesting of these guys for this reason. Catchers, sometimes the bat does come later. It's sort of one of those old kind of baseball axioms that you kind of have to be patient with a catcher's bat, that so much in development, so much time goes into learning to be a catcher that sometimes the bat can come along slower. So although, again, this is his outburst is probably the most out of character from what he's done as a hitter prior to now. But at the same time, at his age, I feel like maybe it's a little, I don't know if more believable, but I can sort of, I'm kind of willing to buy it to some extent. Not that he's going to be this good, but you can kind of put it together in your head and say, okay, that makes some sense. I mean, do you think so?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when the Phillies drafted him, they talked up his bat. They said, we think this guy can hit down the road. And certainly he's proving that. And I wrote the other day about this a little bit, because going into camp, everybody's like, well, Cameron Rupp he's kind of a placeholder until Alfaro or Andrew Knapp get up here. But I very vividly remember in 2008, Carlos Ruiz was having a very bad season offensively. His OPS was around 680. I think that's what he finished at. He was really struggling at the plate. And the Phillies fans were all over Pat Gillick. They wanted Lou Marcin. He was one of the top catching prospects in baseball. He ended up getting traded to the Indians in 09 as part of the Cliff Lee trade. That's how highly regarded he was. Phillies fans wanted Lou Marcin in the big leagues. They thought he was going to be the guy. Carlos Ruiz could not hit. I heard it all the time how Carlos Ruiz could not play in the big leagues. Yeah, they stuck with Carlos Ruiz, and he kind of turned into a pretty decent hitting catcher down the road. And so that's why I agree with you. I think the same thing could be kind of going on with Cameron Rupp a little bit. Now, is he a bona fide number one, play him a little bit more regular than he has been playing type of guy? The jury's still out. But certainly I think going forward, they feel pretty comfortable if next season they want to call up Knapp or Alfaro and kind of ease those guys into it. I think they feel very, very good that Cameron Rupp can kind of, you know, hold down the fort until maybe they are ready. And if they're not ready and he continues to play, well, that's good for them as well.
Mark, I realize at this point we still don't exactly know, but we've got some idea of what exactly is going on with Julio Teheran. What is the level of concern with him with the Braves right now?
You know, this basically was an infected hair that developed, you know, near the top of his right knee, and it developed into more than just that normal pimple that you might say consider an infected hair. And he is, you know, they want to take some precaution. You don't want to allow something like this to allow sweat and other, you know, different particles that you might develop while on the field and increase this infection to the point to where it's a staph infection or something like along those lines. So, I, you know, their hope is that, you know, just give him a couple extra days to recover. Maybe he will pitch on Saturday, which would make him still available to at least pitch in the All-Star game. But right now, I don't think that the level of concern is too great. You know, I just spoke to General Manager John Coppolella a couple hours ago, and he seemed to – his hope was that Julio will pitch on Saturday. So, like I said, I don't think this is a – something to be concerned about long term, but at the same time, they're just taking the safe route.
So, I think if there's not a big worry about his health, then the far bigger question about Teheran is his future. And, you know, I saw the chat, I saw what you've written, and they have been pretty clear and pretty emphatic that this guy isn't going anywhere. And there's a good argument for that. If they think they're going to be good in 2 or 3 years, there's a pretty good chance to think he could be part of that. With that said, this is a starting pitching market that is absolutely barren. He would pretty clearly, unless something really surprising happens, unless some teams that don't look at all like sellers change their mind. He would be pretty clearly the best starting pitcher on the market. As this market develops and as it becomes clear that there's really nobody better than this guy on the market, you're looking at either guys with a lower upside like an Odorizzi, like Hellickson, like maybe Pomerantz has that kind of upside, or you're looking at guys with upside but risk like a Matt Moore kind of guy. As it becomes clear that this guy is probably the best combination of upside and low risk, do you expect them to get tempted as the deadline approaches and perhaps some really impressive offers come in?
I do. I, like you said, I've written it that, you know, that John Coppola says that he's not going to trade him. He says he's nearing right arm territory. Says everything that leads you to believe that, you know, he won't trade him. But at the same time, I do expect, for the reasons that you just pointed out, is this is going to be the guy that the teams may be willing to overspend. I'm not saying you're going to get Dansby Swanson, Aaron Blair, and Ender and Ciarte, that kind of package, but it could be one that rivals that to where they can't say no. And more importantly, this is a team that does have a lot of starting pitching. If they are going to get that big bat, can they get it now? Let's fast forward a little bit. Maybe that big bat is not available right now on August 1st at the trade deadline. But moving into the winter, now you got all the teams that are in playoff caliber teams that might be willing to give a big bat. Would you be willing to trade Khalil at that point during the offseason? Maybe that becomes more of a viable option to get the big bat at that time. But at the same time, I do think that this storyline could change over the next couple of weeks. I don't think the Braves are obviously ever going to come out and say, yes, we're going to trade him. But at the same time, I think we're going to start hearing more and more from scouts that, hey, they're still shopping him around. You're going to hear his name in the mix. Obviously, the Red Sox are a team that there seems to be some fits there. That they have some prospects that would interest the Braves. Frank Wren, obviously, is now with the Red Sox, has a long relationship with Julio Teheran. Julio was one of his favorite prospects coming up through the system when he was Atlanta's GM. So, I certainly don't expect to head into the final week before the trade deadline without hearing a lot of talk about the Braves and Red Sox possible fit. Now, with that being said, they will not be the only team pursuing him because, like you said, I do think he will be the top starting pitcher. Maybe not available, but at least the top one that other teams are targeting.
Joe, the Marlins are a really interesting club right now, and I know their expectations were high. I think they're surprising a few people by being as close to the playoff picture as they are. They made an aggressive move to bring in Fernando Rodney, and just sort of broadly, I understand why they make a move to bolster a club that's in contention. But for a team that really did not seem to have a need in late-inning relief, why did they give up a valuable piece, actually I think a couple of valuable pieces, in order to address what doesn't really seem like it was a major need?
Yeah, they moved to Chris Paddock, a kid, Matthew, out of Greensboro, a right-hander who's just, the last time I saw a Marlins pitcher had those type of numbers at Greensboro was Jose Fernandez, just completely dominating that. And they gave him up for Rodney, and as you said, you know, they as they also like to phrase it, they strengthened the strength. And it was for a couple of reasons. For one, the starting pitching market, which they still are in, Matthew, they're hopeful that, you know, they keep kind of trending the right way. And as we get towards August 1 deadline, some teams that are in it now will fall out of the picture. But they're hopeful to jump in and get a starter somewhere along the line for the final month or two. But, you know, the problem that they're looking at, Matthew, is the guys that are available, there's not like last year. There's no David Price, you know, in on this market. There's, you know, and this is a team that does not have starting pitchers that go deep into games. You know, they haven't had a complete game since Henderson Alvarez on June 3rd, 2014. So they understand every night they're going to need bullpen help. And the rate they were winning, they're going to kind of break Davis Phelps especially, and you know, put Ramos and Barraclough in a bad spot too, because it seems every game they win is close, and those guys all have to pitch. So they already were pitching way too much. Rodney was out there. They kind of kicked the tires on Chapman, but, you know, they were looking for Yelich and, you know, guys off the big league roster that are very impactful for kind of a guy they saw as a rental. Rodney, they have the club option for next year, so they kind of look at him as a year-and-a-half type piece. And if they fall out of it, you know, at the end of this year or sometime next year, he could be a piece they move. And so they figured, you know, get it as deep and as many arms, kind of go the Royals blueprint to kind of overcompensate the fact that they don't have an overly dominant rotation.
So I guess the follow-up to that is, why Rodney in particular? And a quick glance, and that seems like a dumb question because he's got a zero ERA, but, you know, he's a guy that's not that far released from basically essentially being waiver bait. The peripherals don't really match the ERA. He has not sort of had the dominant components that would match the runs allowed. What makes them confident that this is the guy that we've seen over the last 2 months is the real thing they're getting and not a guy who hasn't exactly been working on multi-year deals in recent years?
No, that's very, very fair. And here's a guy who, as you know, has had this downturn, but they scouted him extensively. They looked at, you know, his velocity there. There's also history with, you know, some people in the front office that used to be in Tampa. Jeff McAvoy specifically has history with Rodney. So they kind of know him for a long time. They sat on him a long time also. They pursued him in the off season as well. And, you know, they also decided to strike early before that market got really, really expensive. So it goes to history with the player, with the front office type, scouting, and then, you know, kind of their belief that the arm is back, that, you know, even the double he gave up to Cespedes that won the game for the Mets on Monday was a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. So the velo is clearly there. And obviously the domination, if you're giving up two runs, one earned in 30-something innings, that's not going to really stick. But they feel that there's enough there and enough history that he could get a good year out of him.
You touched on what, to me and I think to anybody, is really the obvious need for this club, which is starting pitching. Conley has been good, but Chen has been, I think it's fair to say, a significant disappointment. And this is a team, I think you can make a case, could really use not one but two starting pitchers, a two and a three kind of thing. You know, there's not really a one out there, especially if Julio Teheran is not on the market. And you start looking at guys like Odorizzi, Matt Moore, Jeremy Hellickson. There's some useful starters out there. Are there particular guys that they have an eye on right now?
Well, you know, we've seen Pomerantz's name out there, and there are, you know, they're going to be looking at that. They're going to look to see if the Yankees are in. You know, if the Yankees go out, is Pineda suddenly a guy that could be available? And if so, he could be attractive to them. But as you know, pretty much everyone they're looking at, it's like a 4 or 5 ERA. I mean, the Reds, yeah, you know, they could probably shop with them, but, you know, there's not much there unless, you know, unless they saw somebody that might be somebody, you know, that they could fix. So you're right, and they do know that. That's why they're really hopeful that Jared Kozars, who is on the minor league injury list and is getting closer to getting ready, that he could come back and you know, be impactful. And they're almost, Matthew, let's say they don't make a trade, I could see the second half being a situation where they have Cozart and Nicolino up here, and they basically, whoever's the hot guy starts, and the other guy backs them up, piggybacks them, almost like, they could almost look like spring training. They're going to have to get a little creative. And as you know, Connolly's going to have to be a lot more consistent. Chen's going to have to pick it up. He has thrown better of late, but you're right. You know, this guy, he came at a pretty pricey tag. I mean, they went with him instead of going a few more dollars and going for Cueto. They made that call. So, you know, they could have, you know, been a little heavier players in the Cueto dealings, but they went with Chen, and thus far has underperformed. And the alarming thing for Chen is the guy doesn't go more than 6 innings, and all the metrics show that pretty much, you know, that 90 pitch range, he starts tiring out, and that third, and definitely not the fourth time through the order, you know, he's highly vulnerable. So, you know, they already are anticipating you know, they basically have an entire rotation unless Jose can somehow, you know, maybe cut down a strikeout or two and go another inning. They're looking. You saw it in game one against the Mets. Kohler, 5 innings out. You know, Connolly, 6 innings out. You know, they're needing somebody, and Shen would be the likely guy that can consistently go 7 or occasionally touch the 8th inning. You know, that would be kind of ideal for them, but it's making for a very nervous second half if they want to get where they want to go unless some of these starters start picking it up.